to invite you to join us at the table. We have a few members here, and as they come in, we'll just try to spot them. Members, for the record, the chief author of this bill is Representative Shumpert, but as sometimes happens with citizen legislatures, when we're called into session the evening of the night before, it's hard to disconnect from your previous life, and of course, Representative Shumpert is a dairy farmer, and he was not able to find anyone to milk his cows by this morning, and so that, in fact, is what he's doing, and he'll join us shortly, but Representative Kowalski, second author and also member of this committee, will be with us. Before we have the presentation, just to set the stage, Representative Peterson provided us with a number of the pictures. We, as you all know, minus the three people who weren't able to join us, we toured this region, and I think most of the photos we see are from Rushford. But if we have somebody who can just take us through this to set the stage of why the urgency of calling this special session, we'll see the photos up there. Who's going to do the photo show? Thank you. You'll have to hold them flat because the reflection.
These are just some of the pictures. I'll give about 5 seconds. Yeah. So brief.
Madam Chair, as they're going through this, what was interesting is right above Rushford on the north end of town was a radio tower up on the hill. And that tower, I understand, was equipped with a camera. And so these were taken the very next morning by that facility. So it was just serendipitous that they're available.
And would have been then from the first 24 hours, yes. Presumably. And again, if you can. Yeah. And
there is the here's a picture in which the water rushed in from the back flood wall and couldn't go any place because of the front flood wall. So it just kept getting higher and higher and higher.
And I think we have some shots taken inside some of the buildings as we,
as a result, this is what is left.
Something?
For cleanup.
And there was one, I don't know if we have it, of that's mud on the floor. There was one inside, I think, the grocery store with all of the items from the shelves on the floor. At any rate, we did not see it in the first 24 or 48 hours, and when we arrived, massive cleanup had been done, and what townspeople told us was that, in effect, though it was a messy job, they had really done the easier part, and the rebuilding was, in fact, the challenge, and there was only so much they could actually do on their own. You see the submerged cars, and I don't know if we've found the grocery store one. Okay. Well, I think it gives you a flavor. It sets the stage for why we're gathered. We'll do just a little bit of business because we do have a quorum. And Representative Mahoney, I think I did see that you attended both the March 20 and the September 5 meetings, and
Madam Chair,
Representative,
we're not officially in session. I don't know that committee can do anything official.
Okay.
We haven't gaveled in a special session, and until we do, we've already adjourned the old one.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't gaveled in a new session. I don't think, you correct me if I'm wrong or staff, but I don't think committees can do any official work until we're gaveled in.
We don't have a bill before us, I know, and we certainly can't take action on the bill or vote, but I was thinking that in the interim, we always have an opportunity for any work, but perhaps not, so we won't ask you to... The other things that are in your packet, and those of you who were down on our tour have already seen these, but just to give a little bit of past history, we have the appropriations in the bonding bill for major disasters, the Roseau flooding, Red River, and the St. Peter tornado, and then we also have the general fund appropriations, and of course today we deal with both bonding and general fund appropriations. We also should add that though we toured and though we gathered some numbers, there was no either attempt to be comprehensive or even pretending that we were being comprehensive in terms of gathering all the numbers of all the damage. And that does continue to come in from some of those towns who weren't on our agenda or our tour. So we have Representative Pawlowski before us to give us an overview of the 2007 disaster relief. So welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I want to thank Chair Hausman and the members of the committee for the tour last Wednesday in southeastern Minnesota. And in particular, I want to thank Jenny Nash, who worked with my committee administrator, Mark Malander, who's behind me. That tour and that hearing took about 2 weeks to put together. And it would not have happened had not Jenny Nash and Mark Malander worked for those 2 weeks to do it. Mark Malander in particular, on Monday, the day after the disaster, I assigned to the local units of government to work with them and to coordinate what we eventually would have as the tour and the hearing. So thank you. I believe that tour and hearing had a great deal to do with the special session that is before us today. So thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I am not Ken Schumper, and I do not pretend to be Ken Schumper, so I will fill in to the best of my ability. The bill that you have before us is the Special Session 1, or House File Special Session 1, and I'm going to walk you through starting on page 2. My expertise on this bill started this morning, so I'll do the best I can, and then staff will fill in. In Subdivision 1, on appropriations on page 2, this is transfer authority. This is to move money where money will be needed, and it is to create as much flexibility as possible between those agencies that are listed in the bill. So some of the questions you have on whether or not funds can be moved may be answered in this first paragraph. Subdivision 2 repayment, this deals with double dipping, and it is supposed to prevent double dipping, that if you get money from the federal government, then you won't get money from the state government for the same thing. Whether or not the language is precise enough, we'll probably have to see. On page 3, we begin to see the appropriations, and it's my understanding that this is, with the exception of Subdivision 2, on page, or on line 3.11, that $2 million is cash, and Subdivision 4, the $2.5 million is cash, and the language that exists on 3.23 is where the state picks up for general fund and debris. The language at the bottom of the page, Subdivision 4, is targeted towards those areas outside of municipalities, cities, and it's an attempt, I think, to address where FEMA may not pick up money, particularly in the rural areas. So we had some discussion on that. That's hopefully where also the flexibility language will come in. On page 4, we begin the bonding, and the larger amount of money, and I think most of this is self-explanatory. If you take a look at the left-hand column and then the amounts as we move down that page, Subdivision 2, where it says infrastructure investment, is for operation and maintenance. That was a huge issue when we visited southeastern Minnesota, and of course these pictures vividly explain that. I'm going to move to page 5, and I'm going to try to highlight things where we might need some explanation, and then we can go back for questions. On page 5, section 5, natural resources, the facility damage in subdivision 2 is targeted toward the state park. So there was some discussion. We have a number of state parks in southeastern Minnesota. This subdivision is targeted for them. As we move to page 6, with the Bowser money, you're looking again at bonding money. Some of you may be much more familiar with this who are on the environment and natural resources, so that's fairly self-explanatory. As we move to page 7, and this is where the large chunks of money, and again on page 7, section 8, as we move to subdivision 2, this is a waiver for criteria. Now, this is where we begin to address what's pictured here, where we have numerous businesses in particular that were impacted in those communities. And this is an attempt to help those businesses. By the waiver of criteria, this is extremely flexible. It may say grant, but in essence, the way this language is written is that they may not have to pay the grant back in certain circumstances. So there is a great deal of flexibility there. When we get to public infrastructure on page 8, you can look at subdivision 3. And again, we're looking at a lot of the damage that we saw, particularly in Russia, when we took testimony on, dealt with wastewater treatment plants, storm sewers, and other facilities, particularly in Rushford. You're looking at the possible replacement of their wastewater treatment plant at a cost of over, I think it was $7 million, or close to $7 million. So there was a lot of discussion on that. When we get down to housing finance, again, on subdivision 9, we're looking at a great deal of flexibility here, and I think flexibility might be the key word that's used throughout this document to address as many of the concerns through the agencies of flexibility once this legislation is passed. On page 9, subdivision 2, economic development housing, this is where we get to individuals, and again, flexibility and forgiveness are probably two words that would be used in that criteria. The Minnesota Historical Society, I'm going to jump here a little bit down to section 10. There were a number of concerns. We have some very, very old, in excess of 100 to 150 year old structures and sites in southeastern Minnesota, some of them some of the oldest in the state, that were impacted by both the rains and the flooding. This $250,000 is to begin to address the concerns that happened with those structures. The education appropriation is a major concern, and that is general fund money. You can take a look on page 10 as we go down for the various types of relief to the school districts that are impacted from flood enrollment impact aid. We're going to see students shifted from Houston for a time to, for instance, Winona because of the Money Creek Bridge that is no longer passable. You're going to see a number of the school districts, Rushford in particular, but others that have had impacted to both their bus fleets and to their building structures. Public transportation aid for those students. You have facility and cleanup aid for Mabel Canton down below. And as I flip to page 11, with again looking at facility and repair and replacement, approximately $60,000 there. I want to go down to subdivision 6. Subdivision 6 is probably one of the most critical ones. It's $90,000, and again, this is the idea here is flexibility, that if we have other districts that have had impacted aid, that this would allow the department to shift those resources around so those districts would also get the aid. On page 11, where we... I'm sorry.
Excuse me, Rep. Mahoney has a question.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Pulaski. You may not be able to answer this. We may have to go to staff. But on page 11, line 19, disaster relief facility grants to other districts, which is a $90,000 appropriation. I was on that tour last Wednesday. There were, I think, just three or four schools that people that I talked to is that just to cover what the insurance doesn't cover, or I mean, maybe staff can help me with that, but that seems, from the damage that I saw, that seems relatively low, unless they had really good insurance. I thought they were self-insured.
Mr. Chair, President, the way I would read it, that's the way I'd read it. I don't think I'll have staff come up and answer that question. So I would read it the same way you are, but Kathy Novak's here. I think she can respond.
Ms. Novak.
Mr. Penn, members, it's my understanding that damaged to school district facilities are eligible cost for FEMA assistance also. So for the most part, this is cost that wouldn't be covered by the FEMA grant to the school district. And it would be in addition to any insurance they might have.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Mahoney.
So this is in excess of, as you explained it, what FEMA would not cover. And do we know, I think I heard on that tour, it was 75% of the damages is what FEMA will typically cover. Am I correct in that?
That's correct. That's my understanding, that they cover 75%.
Well, Mr. Chair, my only concern is that, you know, and again, this is the first time we've seen the bill. I certainly, once it's explained a little bit more in depth, we'll have a better understanding of the cost, but this does not seem, I'm hoping 90,000 covers it, but I don't expect it to, I guess, is the way I'll look at it.
I think that's essentially your question, and maybe we can find out as the day progresses where the 90,000 came from. You and I probably recall when we were in Rushford, they indicated that the lower level of the school building, it was about 100,000.
Right.
So if FEMA covers 75 of it, then 25 of this 90 would be available, but then there were other schools as well. So maybe we can find out how that was arrived at as we move forward.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members, I'm going to move to page 12, section 14, the bond sale authorization. That's fairly straightforward. When we get to section 15, we are once again looking at waiver authorization, and again, this is to ensure that the agencies can facilitate the disbursement of these funds as easily as possible, given the scope of the disaster and the various entities that are involved. I'm going to page 13, section 16. Section 16 is the use of the National Employment Grant. There seems to be some discussion that we might need more language here to implement the $3 million from the Department of Labor. So this would be something I think that fortunately we have the Chair of Finance here. This might be something that would be considered when the bill is actually going to be amended, or there are going to be amendments proposed, that there seems to be some discussion with that particular section of the bill. Section 17, the Human Services Department. This is, if I can look at my notes, about $200,000 from the general fund. In essence here, there is a payment for the contingent of child care, that if individuals have left the area and they still are in need of child care, that they would be getting it. Property tax abatement. There's going to be a date. Let's see. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Property tax abatement. This was done in the past. This is nothing new. Section 18. This was a discussion that we had in Winona. I think every local unit of government that came before us brought up the issue of property tax abatement and reimbursement, and this was a critical component of the flood package. On page 14, in subdivision 3, this is where there may need to be a change also for the Department of Revenue. And that might be another area, Mr. Chair, that when this bill does get to finance, that there will be a discussion on what the Department of Revenue might need here for clarification or change. On Page 15 is pretty straight up disaster aid, extended for business property taxes. This is, again, a discussion that we had in Winona with all of the different local units of government that came before us. That brings us all the way to page 19, we have a series on page 19, 19.23, with ag land. This holds the classification constant for ag property, and we have the chair of ag finance here. I assume he is probably partially responsible for that language, and as I understand it, there'll be an ag component that will be added to this bill of about $4.5 million that perhaps the chair wants to explain once we've finished this discussion. On page 20, subdivision 11, section 22, subdivision 11, there's a waiver for the truth in taxation for only this particular disaster, and that again is to facilitate these units of government that they can move forward, but it is limited to this particular disaster. Public safety on section 1, article 2, this is the bridge. This is a match. Section 2 under transportation, this is dealing with the LAC, and I think this was to speed, wasn't it, the implementation? Okay. With the LAC. On page 21, again, we see general fund money at the top of $2 million. At the bottom of 21, what you see on page 21 actually are items that were vetoed in the last tax bill, and they're reappearing here so that we can take care of items in other disasters that we had in the tax bill that were vetoed. So they're reappearing here. These are things we voted on the last session. There really is nothing new here. On page 22, section 6, we have a reassessment of homestead property damaged by the disaster. This might be a little controversial. The Department of Revenue wanted this. Our tax people say it doesn't work. So between now and finance or the floor, we must decide, I guess, who's right, the Department of Revenue or our tax people, but they're not our tax people in the House are not comfortable with this language, but the Department of Revenue says they need something. And with that, I'm going to move all the way to page 25, section 7. This is simply what we did in the 1997 disaster, so we're repeating it here, a temporary waiver of fees, assessment, or taxes. Again, this is something that we had done before, and we're simply repeating it for this disaster. And Mr. Chair and members, that's the totality of my knowledge of the bill at this point.
Representative Logina.
Thank you. Representative Blousey, thank you for organizing the tour. It was extremely well done, and I don't think we could have gotten any more information in the time allotted than we did. So I do appreciate what you did. One of the questions that I asked at the hearing in Winona was about drinking water. And folks had not talked much about it. And I don't see any allocation to the Department of Health here. And so I took the opportunity this morning to call the Department of Health and ask about drinking water situation down there. And they offered tips to people to test their wells for bacteria. And they tested 795, and 40% of them were contaminated. And the problem is this, that when something is contaminated with bacteria, you can expect under the circumstances that it would be contaminated with something else. And so the Department of Health recommends further testing, and I asked if they had a plan to help folks out, and they said, no, folks are on it their own. We're not capable of helping. And I asked, does that mean they don't know how to do the job or what? And it said, no, it comes down to money. It seems to me that when folks have been affected this way and they need their wells for the testing, that we should be helping out here. This is fundamental. Drinking water is fundamental. And so I would hope that we would consider this as we go to finance. Similarly, there are two wells in Rushford that are contaminated, and they've only tested for bacteria. They haven't tested for anything else.
And it seems to me before people are allowed to drink the water, we need to have it provide some dollars for testing for other things to make sure that the water is safe, not just for the general population, but we all know that people who are pregnant or small children are very vulnerable to contamination. So I hope that that's something. I'm telling you this now because I'm hoping it's something you can do in finance.
Mr. Chair and Rep. McGinnis, I share your concern. I'm down there drinking the water, so I would hope I wouldn't be drinking that. And I did see the testing kits, and we have heard from several homeowners that they're also very concerned. I'm not sure this can be dealt with in finance. This bill apparently is rather sensitive, considering the two bodies, but I share your concern on this. That should be, that's a basic thing we should take care of, drinking water.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's particularly more important in your district where there is the karst land, and we don't know the topography. We don't know how the water runs, but we do know that once someplace is contaminated, contamination can show up someplace else, and you wouldn't expect it. You do have more vulnerable. This may be a vulnerable bill, but you have more vulnerable land.
Mr. Chair, Representative McGinnis, the karst topography of this area has been an issue as long as people have settled there. What you pour into the ground almost immediately goes into the ground water. We may have limestone, but limestone is very porous, and it goes right through the limestone, right into our drinking water, and we have seen it in all of our communities whenever we have had a disaster. So, it is something that has impacted when we have landfills. One of the issues with getting rid of the landfills was because of the leaching that was going on into our drinking water. That was a major concern for us when we've had the large corporate farms, and they have had these so-called holding pens. Pens, rather. Those things have also leaked into the groundwater, so it's an issue that has been with us from the very beginning. I would hope we would address it as we move forward today.
And Rep. Magenius, I don't know if that question surfaced in the negotiations or not, but maybe this is a good time to point out that there have been several references to finance and amendments, and it's my understanding that with the agreement, any amendments that would be entertained incorporated would have to be run by the Speaker, Majority Leader, and the Governor. So if someone would like to pursue that so that we know what the standing would be relative to the agreement, that might be helpful as the day progresses, because I suspect there are going to be other issues that surface that it might be reasonable to want to incorporate, but that's my understanding of the agreement, that we have to get all three entities to concur. Representative Logenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As Representative Pulaski presented, he used the word flexibility a lot, and the well testing in the context of this bill is not that expensive. However, it is extremely fundamental to people's health and welfare. So I would hope that in some of these places where the Department of Health is not mentioned, that perhaps we can expand that and allow for some of these dollars to be used for testing of private wells to see what else is in there, and particularly the testing of the public wells. I mean, we're dealing with the wastewater treatment system. We don't drink wastewater. I think there's room here, and I just cannot see that people would not agree with this.
Mr. Chair, what can I do? I just spoke with Ms. Novak, and the flexibility I did bring up was not flexible enough to address your concern, so we're going to take a look at how we can increase that flexibility, assuming that the powers that be agree. So we're working on it.
I just wanted the committee to be aware of what the general understanding is, and I'm not responding to a given proposed amendment, but what the process will be.
Absolutely. And if I could respond,
I would expect, when we've done this quickly, I mean, I didn't know until yesterday afternoon that I needed to call the health department this morning, that folks have had so much on their mind that this might not have been the front and center. And so I'm not surprised that it wasn't. If the health department didn't bring it up, and apparently they didn't, then it's incumbent upon us to do it. The health department lacks leadership right now, so maybe that's one of their problems. But now that we know, it doesn't seem to be a difficult problem to deal with. Thank you.
Representative Fulbert.
Mr. Chair, and maybe this goes to staff. On page 4, maybe there'll be an amendment for cleaning up, but subdivision 4, is that a GO bond? And if it is, it doesn't say that. I think it is, but...
Mr. Chair, there is still some tweaking to this that needs to be done, and I'm going to have Ms. Novak refer to that, because there is a difference between the spreadsheet and the text of the bill as far as the demarcation on what is cash and GO.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Fulbert, the default appropriation for all of Article 1 is the bond proceeds fund.
Okay.
And having said that, there are many places on this draft where we don't specify the general fund, and that is being corrected.
So, Mr. Chair, for my clarification, then, if it doesn't say general fund, it's automatically
the bond.
Bond proceeds fund. Thank you. And Mr. Chair, just one other thing. Are we going to then make that kind of consistent throughout? Because I noticed that there are some that are not.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Welke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And first of all, I just want to thank all of the members who contacted their employers, or if you're self-employed, just took the time to come down here and be here today. As somebody who represents a number of residents who are affected by the flood and the torrential rain, I truly appreciate it. And I can tell you the residents in my district truly appreciate the time that you have committed. I cannot go anywhere without people asking me, actually just about every single individual I run into, asking me when the special session will be called. And so I was glad to hear that the special session was called. I was just a little surprised that it was less than 24-hour notice. But the first question I have, I just want some clarification on what's in the bill and what's going to be covered for my local communities and for those residents. There have been a number of facilities that have been impacted, and some of them have had their basement flooded. For instance, we had an ambulance garage. The basement was flooded. They may have to replace their furnace, their water heater. City Hall basement was inundated with water, and voting equipment was affected. And so, Ms. Novak or Representative Plowski, can you tell me that if those items will be covered somewhere in this bill? And I have two questions. First of all, will they be covered somewhere in the bill? And the second question is, will they be covered if it's not something that's going to be covered under the federal disaster assistance?
Who would like to address that one?
We've had this discussion earlier today in my office, and we're sort of grappling with it. I'm going to let Ms. Novak answer it directly. There's a section of the bill I'm alluding to, but I'm going to let her respond to that one.
Ms. Novak?
Mr. Chair and Representative Welke, you've asked about two different types of entities. One is a private business and one is a local unit of government, so a public concern. There is money in the bill to provide assistance to both types of businesses. The Department of Employment and Economic Development on page 7, subdivision through the Minnesota Investment Fund, there's $35 million appropriated in general funds to that fund, and many of the criteria that exist for the current fund are waived for the purposes of disaster relief, so I believe that there's enough flexibility in there to help businesses. Public units of government are assisted through bond proceeds primarily, and that would be inspection, I'm having a hard time finding it, I'm sorry, in part under section 3 and also in part under subdivision 3 of section 8, employment and economic development. So there are various places where local units of government can get assistance for their infrastructure needs. In terms of something as specific as a voting machine, I'm not entirely certain which, if any, of these programs would be able to replace that. But for other types of needs, non-kind of equipment needs, the money is in the bill to help local units of government.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then the last question I have for you is just related to city and county parks. That would also be under the general allocation that's made that you were talking about earlier with the other local units of government. So the city and county parks that may have sustained substantial damage, they would be able to receive reimbursement under that as well?
Ms. Elbank.
Mr. Chair and Representative Welty, I believe that would be under the appropriation to the Department of Natural Resources, Section 5 on page 5. That's the state facility. I'm not entirely certain if we've considered public parks in this specifically, other than through the match for the FEMA fund.
That is all for now. Thank you.
Representative Duskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have kind of a question related to maybe in the same line as Representative Walty's discussion, just some clarification, Ms. Ovak and Mr. Pawlowski. Representative Pawlowski and I share a home for disabled children in Minnesota City, Home and Community Options. And in talking, Representative Pawlowski, with Mr. Thede there, he outlined, I think he had communicated to you too and did to me as well, some of their needs for, I believe, two different homes in Minnesota City that they have. Are those types of needs covered in this bill or not?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kowski, if you turn to page 7. Right. If you look at 7.25, where it says businesses that provide residential health care, child care, social, or other services, because of the flexibility of this language, we're thinking that this would work. And I'm very familiar with the issue that you just brought up. They were hit about $250,000 in structural damage, and they have no flexibility at all to pay for it. So we're hoping that this is a language that would address the concern you just raised.
Thank you, Representative. Mr. Chair, one more question. Thank you, sir. The section on schools, I have talked to both St. Charles and Wabasha Kellogg schools, which are two of the schools that are kind of outstanding from these that are mentioned specifically in the bill, and neither of, oh, I'm sorry, page 11, line 11.21, I believe is where we're looking, subdivision 6. Both St. Charles and Wabasha Kellogg, I interviewed them within the last couple of days, and both of them said they don't have any damage to report or any expenses that they would like to claim through this process. Lewiston, Altura, I talked to them. Actually, their number that they gave me was $10,130, which is different from the $5,000 here. And I'd be curious to wonder if, given the finite number of school districts, whether we could become even more accurate with this in quite a bit of a hurry here.
Mr. Chair, and Representative Granatowski, I believe the number you're looking at, the 5,000 on 11.15, is transportation. But when you go down to the 90,000 in Subdivision 6, certainly that could be used for those school districts. That would be money that the department could direct to those particular needs. So this is where we did hope that the flexibility of this language would be used for your school district. So that should be used.
Thank you.
And it's your call.
Yeah.
Okay, are there any other questions? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is following up on someone with Representative Solberg's question on the flexibility or how much of a draft the bill is. My questions are on page 6, the 6.13 to 6.31. And I've been involved with the discussions with leadership on how this would occur. As the bill is written, is this currently...
We had some finance committee members coming in, and just so they know the status, we're still in capital investment, and as soon as capital investment is done, then finance will convene.
Okay.
There were a couple of them walked in, so just wanted them to be aware. Representative Hansen.
The $3 million listed on 6.13, is that currently as bonding money for reinvestment in Minnesota?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, that's bonding money.
To my knowledge, I think that there was a look at having $3 million in cash with flexibility on RIM bonding, and then the bill as it's written is $3 million in bonding with flexibility on cash. So this is my only committee. I'm not on the finance committee, so I'm not sure how, and there were some additional discussions about having money put into RIM that were like within the last hour. So I just would offer that I'm, you know, willing to work with you on that if there's some technical corrections.
Mr. Chair,
Representative
Hansen, I've been told this is still an open item under discussion and still being negotiated.
The Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I guess to the committee, the optimal word of these 20 pages is flexibility, I guess, so I'm hearing that time and time again. So keeping that in mind, could somebody define the flexibility on page 7, line 29, criteria and requirements must be locally established, and are we going to have 5 or 10 or 15 communities establishing criteria for these grants? And is there going to be any overarching organization that's going to deal with these other than the commissioner? And I'm not sure which I'm going to assume, and that always gets me in trouble, it's the Department of Employment and Economic Development commissioner. So is there an overarching group that will be kind of coordinating with these localities prior to getting to the commissioner, or is this going to be Rushford coming up with a set of criteria and Lewiston and Plainview and Minnesota City? And
Mr. Chair, as I understand it, this is what we have done in the past. So this is language that we're carrying over from previous disasters. And you're correct in that the criteria would be established locally, but again, it would be established by those who are closest to it in the need. It would have to be approved by the commissioner, and it is for review of the legislature. So given those, that it's something we've done. It is, again, to give those local communities all the flexibility they need to use those dollars directly. The commissioner still has to approve it, and then we still have to review it.
Mr. Chair, I'm having been on that tour and talked to the officials in those particular cities, and I think it was 4 that we stopped in, it might have been 5. I have a lot of faith in those local officials. Even 2 weeks after, they looked a bit stunned at the scope of what was going on in their communities. I don't know that we'll get another chance to look at it, Representative Pawlowski and members, because once we sign a diet in special session, we really won't have much input. So that is something that, you know, it would be nice to have a wider organization across the southeastern Minnesota kind of coordinating before they got to the commissioner, but if it's something we've done in the past, certainly can live with it and take a look at what that, how that played out in other areas. So,
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, in all of the other disasters that we've had recently, the initial bills were not the last bill; they were the first bill. And in fact, looking at this bill, you're seeing legislation that's carrying over from previous disasters that the legislature is still reviewing them. So, I like the language here because it does allow that flexibility. We still have oversight. And given the scope of this and the fact that it's been a moving target, when the water went down, the real damage then was revealed, particularly in Houston and Stockton and Goodyear. I don't see anything that we have not done in the past and that we haven't reviewed and then altered as the situation changed.
Okay, we've got, I think, one last question, then Representative Peterson, and then the Finance Commissioner.
I was just responding to the question. I looked at that same question, and then I flipped the page 825, and it speaks about the fact that the Commissioner and the Chair of Senate Finance and the Ways and Means will look at the grant programs that they'll be administered. So it looks like it's coordinated. So I had the very same question until I saw that piece.
Yeah, I guess we did have one other question, Representative Singleton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a question procedurally, and I understand, you know, because we're not in special session yet, we can't act on this bill, and certainly there'll be some other committees or at least one other committee that's looking at this bill. You know, I'm looking at the spreadsheet and what's in the bill, and there's geobonding in it. So I'm kind of first question is procedurally, this bill must take 81 votes on the House floor. Is that correct?
With bonding, it would.
Okay. And then to just follow up, Mr. Chair, could you just walk through what will happen today procedurally through the Finance Committee and other places, and then how any changes would occur? Obviously, you can't amend it, so we go into session. Just identify what will happen today.
Any amendments? The idea with capital investment, as I understood it this morning, was to do a walkthrough, and if there was anything that you noticed that might need an amendment, as I mentioned earlier, then they would have to be signed off by the leadership in both bodies as well as the governor's office. Any amendments will be adopted in the Finance Committee, and there should be a window of opportunity then to get the bill drafted as amended for introduction at 5 o'clock. So that would be the general procedure. I think we've uncovered with the discussion here a couple of areas that obviously need continuous discussion, and I know Representative Lagenius pointed out one area that the flexibility didn't cover that you'll need to check. And you're on finance, if I recall, right? So maybe you can check that out then and be prepared if everybody signs off for an amendment there. But that's essentially the process.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, with that, we have a couple of announcements by the Chair, Alice Houseman.
Just a reminder to the capital investment members of our September 18th through 20th Northwest Minnesota site visit and the September 26th through 28th Northeast site visit. If you haven't confirmed yet, we need that information. Thank you.
Okay, with that, any other business, Jenny? Okay, with that, the capital investment committee is adjourned.